Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we visit with John English, a partner with Global Market Advisors and an expert on sports betting, to discuss a panel he's moderating at the October 5th episode of the UNLV Gaming and Hospitality Education Series. The GGB podcast is brought to you by Global Payments Gaming Solutions. Global Payments Gaming Solutions is a division of Global Payments, which enables the world's gaming entertainment leaders to create amazing consumer experiences and maximize spend across all their physical and digital properties. To learn more, visit globalpaymentsgaming.com. John English has been in the sports betting business for decades. For that reason, he's moderating the sports betting session at the UNLV Gaming and Hospitality Education Series on October 25th. English and Vic Salerno, who was also on the panel, developed the first mobile sports betting application when they were with a company called American Wagering, which was later acquired by William Hill. English understands the relationship between sports betting and casino operations and explains how it can boost not only the gaming revenues, but also the casino's non-gaming output. Because of his experience, Global Market Advisors is one of the most sought-after consultants for casinos looking to install sports betting. He spoke with me at the GMA offices in Las Vegas in September. John English, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. It's good to see you. We're talking about sports betting because you're helping us out with the UNLV Gaming and Education and Hospitality Series on October 25th, moderating a sports betting panel. We're really excited to have you there.
Thanks, Roger. It's always great to be with you, and the UNLV thing is also very exciting.
Yeah, we have such a great panel. You know, in addition to you, who you've been in the business for so many years, somebody who's in business longer than you, Vic Salerno, is going to be on the panel.
Absolutely.
We've got Mark Liparelli, the former head of the Nevada Gaming Commission, now a senator here in Nevada. We have Matt Davey, who is head of NYX Gaming, which was sold to Scientific Games, which is the platform so many people are using now. And finally, we have Lee Richardson, really experienced bookmaker from the UK who understands how to work in a regulated market. So what a panel we have, and we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, what a great group of people he put together. Yeah. I mean, really, and I'm honored to be moderating it, so I'm going to have to give these guys some really tough questions.
Great.
That
should be fun. Well, let's start with you know, about a year before even the Supreme Court decision came down, we interviewed a lot of people. We published a lot of articles about, you know, people predicting what was going to happen, you know, when and if the PASPA was repealed by the Supreme Court, and you really were the guy who hit it right on the nose. First of all, you predicted that it was going to be completely turned over. You said it was going to be, you know, sports betting is really a marginal piece of business, but all the other amenities that it brings in is going to be, you know, very additive to the revenues of the casinos. You said it would go state by state, and the federal involvement would be minimal. And then you said casinos would partner with the larger sports betting companies who have that experience. So you said all of this stuff, and it's all come through. So what can we expect within the next year? I mean, we've got, what, five or six states now, and a bunch more coming on next year.
Yeah, well, we've got a handful of people already on board, right?
Right.
So that's been exciting, and it really is. It's been an interesting few months for sure. I mean, as we were talking about earlier, I've never seen it so busy.
Right.
Everything's about sports betting
right now.
So I would expect to see here shortly, states like New York, which will have legislation in place, and that'll be a big one, of course.
Right, sure.
And Jersey, I think, is going to be very successful because they're progressive.
Mm-hmm.
Some states are struggling.
Right.
They don't have the proper regs in place yet, and some of them don't have favorable tax rates.
Right.
And so a lot of work needs to be done. So you have a little tussle in West Virginia, as we had previously talked about, with the director stepping down and their general counsel leaving recently in West Virginia. Mississippi is a little bit of a challenge as well because I'm not sure whether or not you have mobile and everything's going to be
right.
on property. I think that what we really need to look forward to is technology, because that's what's going to make a difference. Mobile technology.
Sure,
we love mobile technology.
Right. You were one of the first ones to do it here in this country, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. We were were very excited about it. And, you know, I think it's important for a lot of these places to adopt it because that's where most of the bets are coming from.
Right. What's the percentage in Nevada now of mobile versus in-house?
About 65% of all bets come over mobile, which is amazing. Right?
Sure.
I mean, convenience means everything when it comes to sports betting. And mobile is the ultimate convenient way to place a bet.
Yeah. Well, just yesterday, I placed a few bets before the game started on Sunday, you know, because right on my living room couch. So it's easy to do. It's convenient, and you get to wait until the last minute to make your bet.
Exactly. And if you think about it, we do everything on our phones now.
Right. Yep.
Really. I mean, you know, it's great if you're in the casino and you want to place a bet and enjoy the day at the sports book. That's always great.
Right.
But that's not always the case.
Sure.
People work. People do things. But now you still have the ability to place a bet.
Right.
And that's,
that's
important.
Okay. So I mentioned the congressional action, and nobody really thinks that's going to happen, but people are starting to get a little nervous now because the minority leader in the Senate, Chuck Schumer, has come out in favor of the integrity fee. You know, a couple of other senators have mentioned that as well. Is that a concern for you right now?
Yeah, it is. I mean, first of all, I don't think that, you know, federal oversight is necessary at all.
No.
And most importantly, I don't think league oversight in sports betting adds any benefit whatsoever.
Right. Mm.
I think I've been fairly outspoken about the integrity fee. I mean, for, you know, Las Vegas has been around, Nevada's been around for over 50 years in the sports betting business, and we've never paid an integrity fee.
Right.
And I think the leagues really need to focus on, you know, their own integrity, watching their players. I mean, as we had mentioned earlier, LeBron James played with a broken hand. Nobody reported that from the league side. I mean, it's from a bookmaking perspective, from the sports betting side of the equation, it's their money. It's their, they have to watch.
Right.
It's their integrity
they
got to keep in. And of course, everybody wants to report something when they see something afoul. So I think we're the first line of integrity is in bookmaking, and perhaps the league should pay the bookmakers a fee.
Sure, exactly. Well, you know, you mentioned the injury to LeBron. I mean, in the NFL, when they put their injury reports out, you know, you never know whether to believe them or not, because the coaches use them to mask real problems or to make you think somebody's got a problem when they really don't. I mean, how can you trust them?
Exactly. Well, you know, there's a little bit of an issue even going on here in Las Vegas with our Golden Knights, with our hockey team,
right?
Nate Schmidt, a trace amount of very small amount, not something that you would consider cheating.
Mm-hmm.
However, he's been banned for 20 games, 20 plus games, and can't play. So, you know, it's, I don't see how the leagues can protect integrity of the players. I mean, the best way is keep an eye on their own team, keep an eye on their players, and do that. But they can't be behind the scenes in every sports book around the country monitoring.
And aren't the leagues actually buying some of their data from some of these companies that sell sports data?
Absolutely
information?
Absolutely, they are. And there's great companies out there that supply data.
The Genius
Doc Best, Sports Radar. These guys pay an enormous amount of money to the leagues to get that data.
Right.
So, you know, it's, we're not ones to believe in scraping data. We think that's kind of, you know, that's, I could see that being an issue for them. But to legally purchase the data through somebody, it's very common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
doing it here for years.
Right.
Yeah.
So we've seen sports betting been legal since June, actually active sports betting. What do you think of the numbers that have been reported by New Jersey and Mississippi, the ones that we've seen anyway up until now?
Certainly bumped up with football season.
Yeah,
it was tough to say before football season. We're two games in now.
Right.
So I think it was $95 million or so that New Jersey's done.
And that was just in August,
Already $1 billion in legal.
Mm-hmm.
So they're on the right track for sure. But New Jersey has also been fairly progressive as to what their regs are. They've been, if it wasn't for New Jersey, we wouldn't be in this situation because they challenged PASPA to begin with. So looking at the Jersey numbers are fairly exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Delaware's up. Everybody's up on their numbers, so it's great. It's also football season.
Right.
So it was good timing to have everything launched just ahead of that.
So we'll see how serious it gets
next month. New Jersey's going to be amazing for starts. Probably the best of the six or seven that we see on the map right now.
Right.
Others have limitations in place, the tax rates that are favorable.
Right.
So I think that Jersey's probably going to shine pretty well here soon.
Yeah, no question about it. So has anything really surprised you in the first few months of legal sports betting in the U.S. outside of Nevada?
Yeah. You know, what surprises me most is that most states aren't coming to Nevada. Talking to our chairwoman, right. who's she's amazing.
Right.
I mean, she's a wealth of knowledge, and we have a great control board. You know, we have history here. I think that it surprises me that a lot of states haven't just kind of replicated our regs or our laws instead of reinventing the wheel.
Right.
You find a lot of so many states change, you know, trying to put tax rates and talking about integrity fees that really just don't work for the model of sports betting.
Right.
It's a high volume, low margin business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that surprises me that people just don't realize that after all these years of getting PASPA overturned and knowing that it was coming, that they didn't really work a little harder to get inside information from Nevada and other states to really figure out what we did right.
Mm. So we had Joe Asher from William Hill on this podcast a couple of months ago, right after the PASPA rule was overturned, and we were talking about what is the window for a decent tax rate, and he said, New Jersey got it right with the 8%. He said, but he was even a little concerned about their 12% on mobile sports betting. Is really 12% the limit that you can go to make it a legitimate business?
Yeah, I think Joe's spot on. I mean, I think 10% is probably the limit you could go.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not recommending that.
Sure, right.
Again, I would stick with Nevada, where it's 6.75% tax rate here, which is very fair. And that goes across the board, whether it's on mobile or at the counter. So 6.75% there's 6.75% here, and then of course there's 0.25% of tax from the federal government that comes off of the handle.
Of course, right.
So off of the amount of bet dollars,
and that's a fairly significant amount too, because it does come off the handle.
It does. It comes off the top.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think Nevada's got a great tax rate. I think that New Jersey has got it. The sweet spot right in there, but 12% is concerning, and I agree with you on that. Yeah.
So what do you think a state like Pennsylvania is going to do, which has a 34% tax rate on it? I mean, I was surprised to actually see some companies jump in to want to put sports betting in there, even at that tax rate.
Yeah, well, Pennsylvania is such a great state, everybody wants to be part of it.
Yeah.
But there's also a $10 million buy-in.
Exactly, on top of that, right?
So right, you got the tax rate, you got the buy-in. It's almost a deal breaker. It's very difficult for a lot of these guys. It's in some cases, well, even if you, Pennsylvania's a little bit different, so we'll stay with Pennsylvania for a minute. It's a great state for betting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've
right.
been very progressive with everything,
mm-hmm.
from VLTs, the casinos, and everything, and it's a great market. So, but everybody's got to realize that they're charging these onerous tax rates, it's going to hurt. I mean, Rhode Island at 51%.
Right.
I mean, that's going to hurt. And in the end, the idea is to make money and to get money back from the offshore illegal bookmakers.
Right.
It's not to try to bust Las Vegas. It's not going to happen, right? I don't see that happening. If I have any predictions to say, I would say that, having been here for over 40 years, we were originally told that once tribal gaming was coming into play, then Las Vegas was over.
Right.
And that didn't happen. We only got bigger and better and what have you.
Sure.
The sports betting is all about trying to win back that money from the offshore books.
Right.
And in order to do that, we have to charge a decent... You can't pass anything on to the customer.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So...
I mean, how can you avoid that in Pennsylvania? I mean, you're going to have to do better than minus 110, aren't you? I mean...
I don't think you'll be competitive if you do.
Right.
You know, and it's going to be a
problem. Because they'll stay with the with their neighborhood bookie or the offshore better.
I'll tell you what a lot of us are doing.
Yeah.
Is hoping that they will change the regs eventually, take a look at their business model and say, you know what, we got to make this a little more. That goes back to what I was saying earlier. I wish more states would have got counsel from our state.
Right,
Our state.
Yeah.
We have great operators here, and you got great guys like Joe Asher and Vic and everybody else that are sharp and brilliant. They know when a model is going to work and not.
Sure.
And I'll tell you, some of these are just... are not going to work, and I don't want to see that happen.
Right.
We really want to see this done right.
Yeah, no question. So let's talk about mobile betting. Yeah, you, along with Vic Salerno, were the pioneers here in the U.S. with American Wagering, setting up the first mobile sports betting system in Nevada. I know I got it before anybody else, and
you
I got
did.
To try it out, and it was fun, and that's still my major account where I play my sports bets. But But, you know, frankly, I think you'll admit that Nevada is not on the cutting edge of mobile betting anymore, since you can't deposit or withdraw on your phone. You have to go into the casino. So is that a problem that you think they're going to fix at some point?
It's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. I do.
Yeah.
I do. I think our new chairwoman is extremely progressive, mm-hmm. and she's sharp. And, you know, it's poker. We have poker here,
right.
And you can sign up for a poker account,
mm-hmm.
Online.
Right.
And there's fail safes in place now that mm-hmm. didn't exist before. When we first did this now,
right.
We're going back to 2008 when we right. first started testing. We launched on BlackBerry mm-hmm. in 2010.
Right.
You got to keep in mind the iPhone is only 10 years
That's
old.
That's right, yeah.
So when we first launched, there was, you know, some question as to whether or not it was going to be safe mm-hmm. and the security. But now we're talking almost 10 years later.
Right.
And it's proven to be a great asset
sure.
to everybody. As we mm-hmm. mentioned, about 65% of the bets, maybe right. even more, are coming by mobile. So we're hoping that we soon will be able to sign up online mm-hmm. and be able to have people sign
right.
up online. It is an impediment.
Right.
And surely New Jersey, obviously, has removed that impediment, and, mm-hmm. and it's going to work well for them.
Right.
You need people to sign up, and again, if you're going to have mobile, you need to add convenience, but I also understand the state's need for security, and, you know, but there's now so many different ways in place now to be able to do your know your customer,
mm-hmm. sure.
geolocation, and all
right.
that stuff is now all off-the-shelf product. Was
right.
when we first developed it, none of it existed,
right.
so we had to do it from scratch.
Right. Well, I remember you telling me you drove down to Prim to make sure as soon as you crossed the border.
We went on a jet ski on the river in Laughlin to see if we were going to
right, exactly,
Arizona.
Right, right. Yeah, well, I live in Boulder City, and one of some of the early ones, William Miller's the one that always worked, your system, but one of the other early systems didn't work in Boulder City.
Yeah.
And I'm about 2 miles from the border there, so I could only use yours. That's another reason I stuck with it. So.
Yeah, it was. We went through a lot of work, but we know more about geolocation, satellites, and everything than any bookmaker should ever know.
Then we'll ever have to know anymore.
Yeah,
I guess,
exactly.
Right? So New Jersey obviously has a system where you can open the account, deposit online, withdraw online. Is that going to give them an advantage in terms of opening up sportsbook betting accounts?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's an absolute advantage. Convenience is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can open up an offshore book, without ever having to go offshore to
right.
do it, you're not gaining any business by putting that hurdle in place for anybody.
Right.
And like I said, I could understand if the technology wasn't up to speed
mm-hmm.
that the state would require that to happen. But now there's so much technology in place,
right.
you know, to be able to prevent issues that may have existed in the past.
Right.
Safeguards in place, and the gamble ID, all these
right.
various things, geo-comply, KYC
mm-hmm.
type
right.
of environments that exist out there right off the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that New Jersey's doing it right.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk about the sponsor for this episode. You know, there are a lot of payment processing companies in this industry, but Global Payment Gaming Solutions is really special. This company is a division of Global Payments, one of the largest payment processors in the world, and it enables the world's gaming entertainment leaders to create amazing customer service and maximize spend across all of their physical and digital properties. The company's complete suite of payment solutions enables safe, secure, and trusted cash access at the cage, on the casino floor, or online. And Global Payments analytics solutions enable clients to view performance across all of their gaming properties. So visit the company's website at globalpaymentgaming.com to learn more about its solutions for casino, debit, and credit cash advance, e-check, ATM, full-service TITO and payment kiosks, anti-money laundering compliance assistant, layered security, analytics, and much more. Now let's get back to our interview.
You know, I have a lot of the mobile apps here in Nevada, and I understand that some of the apps that have been launched in New Jersey, and I haven't even had a chance to open any there, but some of them are a lot more customer friendly. Is there a big difference between the apps right now that you know of?
A lot of it's preference, Roger.
Yeah.
I mean, it just is. I mean, some people like what they like. I For me, the most important thing about the app when we were designing ours was being able to, and it's going to be the worst thing I'll probably say, is be able to place a bet with your thumb while driving. Okay? Because that's when it needs to be easy.
Right. You're listening to talk radio. It's sports talk radio. I got to bet that.
Exactly. Right. You can do it with your thumb. But, I mean, the reality is that I like less touch. I like to be able to get in there and place my bet with as few amount of touches as possible, especially when you're playing in-game.
Right.
I don't need necessarily to see my home screen with a bunch of trending things of what's happening. Other people like that.
Yeah.
They like to see what other people are betting on. Yeah. They like to see what's happening in the marketplace. For me, I like to make it as simple and as possible to get down on the action, and particularly in in-game, because it's important on that time frame. Other apps I've looked at, they all have their own little unique aspects to them, and they have different things. Some have you can toggle between fantasy, you can toggle between real sports betting, you can toggle between parimutuel. We don't have that quite here yet, so some of the apps I've seen are very innovative, very sharp, and of course they're only going to get better from here.
Absolutely. Well, I'm looking forward to getting back to New Jersey and getting some of those apps.
Machine learning is changing lives too, because it's learning your habits, it's learning what you enjoy and what have you, so it could automatically push things to you when things are happening. It doesn't necessarily have to be right when you open your app.
Right. Okay.
For me, when I open that app, I want to place a bet.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So you mentioned geolocation. Just like iGaming, it's very important in sports betting because you cannot bet over state lines. So this brings into the equation the Wire Act, which is one of the reasons why you can't bet on sports betting across state lines because it prohibits it. Is there any way we can fix that, or is there language in any of these bills that can get around that?
Yeah, people are working on ways. I don't know about getting around it.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to work with it.
Sure.
Because it is what it is, and of course, if we want to get the federal government involved, then you're going to bring in federal oversight.
Right. Yes.
So. In this particular case, I think that the Wire Act is also, it's an impediment to sports betting. It's a hurdle that needs to be overcome, because it would be fantastic to be able to share liquidity with a lot of these states going across state lines.
Right.
But there's other things besides the Wire Act as well that are in place. Certain states have completely different regs than other states, so sharing everything has to be on the common ground. I've been one for saying that I wish that, and I said this earlier, I guess, is that that I wish all the states were a little more mirrored with each other. It'll make things easier. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, with poker. With poker, it was easy for Nevada to work out an arrangement between New Jersey and Delaware to share liquidity between their groups. I think that's going to become important with sports betting as well. So the Wire Act will need to be addressed. And then tribal land.
Right.
We have IGRA, which is also in play there, too, which also will need to be addressed in order to share liquidity and be able to go across state lines.
We know the tribes are very reluctant to go back to the federal government to talk about IGRA, just like we're reluctant to talk about the Wire Act. So.
A lot of them have just renegotiated their compacts, and they're not willing to open it up for sports betting. It doesn't equate to enough revenue for them at that point to be able to do that when they're fighting for table games and more slot machines.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of misconceptions that the tribes all want sports betting, and that's not necessarily true.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And those that do have to understand that it's a... you have to build up a business base for that, and at some point you either share liquidity because you want to open up a really nice sports book and only have 5, 6, 7 bettors.
No question. So I interviewed Dave Reebok, the head of the DGE in New Jersey this summer, and he told me that he thinks New Jersey will surpass Nevada in handle in sports betting next year in 2019. Is that possible?
Let's see, they're at $1 billion in their first I should say $1 billion yet, but if it's a run rate of a year, it's $1 billion. They did $95 million, so I would say next year is it's possible, but I would say within the next couple of years, definitely.
Yeah. I saw later he amended that to say 2021. So
yeah, okay, well, there you go.
He was a little aggressive.
They were a little bit more on the same page. I think next year is tough. You got a lot of other states that are opening up as they go. And, of course, New Jersey's got to bring in the right products, make it work. And, you know, it takes a little time to tweak some of these things, too.
Sure,
and you figure out what works and what doesn't. But he's done a great job out there. And he's been very progressive as well.
No question.
And I think what they're allowing for, I wish that Nevada could also take a couple of pages out of that.
Yeah,
I think we will at some point.
Yeah, I think everybody will see the two. They like to call themselves the gold standard, but Dave likes to call them the platinum standard. But
we're having a new chairwoman and a new commission here for the most part, semi-new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're all sharp people and they know what's best. I don't think we're going to let Nevada fall behind.
Great.
But New Jersey's been doing a great job. And Mr. Reback's done an incredible job of being able to stick around, fight this whole PASPA thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I credit them a lot for making all of this
happen. Absolutely, no question. Well, I want to switch gears a little here. We saw each other a couple of weeks ago at an esports conference here in Las Vegas, and you know a heck of a lot about that stuff, too, and I'm still feeling my way through it. So what do you think is the potential for esports in the casino industry?
Well, first of all, I'm a gamer. I love it.
Right.
So I have five children.
Yeah.
So I started out with playing Madden football.
Sure,
and that's something I love doing. I almost love playing Madden football more than watching football.
Yeah.
But it's first of all, it's a huge opportunity. I mean, the audience is massive.
Mm-hmm.
Getting our arms around it is going to be a little tough because there's a lot of content. I mean, there's just a lot there. I mean, you got so many different titles, like Fortnite that's coming up, and it's a phenomenon.
And that just exploded in the last couple of years.
Incredible. You got Overwatch. You've got Leagues of Legends. You got Dota. Players Unknown Battleground.
Right.
Call of Duty. CS:GO. And Madden. You got all these various types of esports. I think the opportunity itself is fantastic. From the gaming and casino side, not so sure yet. It's too soon to tell if the casinos even need it.
Right.
I mean, because people are building these in movie theaters, they're building them in bars, they're standalone arenas now, and the crowds are just phenomenal. I mean, I went to a championship, a full house.
Yeah.
It was sold out, people screaming and yelling and whatever. So it's a great amenity, I think, for now to have these tournaments hosted in the casinos.
Right.
I'm not so sure yet that the esports gamer or the player are betters or the audience yet.
Right.
You know, you don't see. I haven't seen a lot of crossover.
Right.
We just recently were at this convention, and we went to this beautiful place at the top of the Luxor, which is incredible. They did an incredible job of building out a esports arena up there, but only 100 seats in the arena. It's mostly done for broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the big money for esports is still in broadcast.
Yeah.
You know, you take a look at Twitch.
Yeah, and I think Caesars has discovered that. They built a broadcast studio behind Bally's, right off the strip there, where they've held a couple of esports tournaments, and they also host an esports league, from what I understand. So is that one of the ways you can go, do you think?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
I would think that works well. It's a sport, so just having it inside a casino, I mean, it's not quite poker.
Right.
We have correlated poker with sports betting, haven't yet quite figured out where the gamer sits.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's a different demographic. It's a different audience in general, and it's also a percentage of wallet. Type of thing. Is there enough wallet to get in there and have them play slot machines? Mm-hmm. And does that even attract them?
Right.
I mean, after playing something that requires so much dexterity with their hands and everything, it's so live and they're so involved.
Right.
Can somebody really sit there and play a slot machine?
Right. And even if it's a skill-based slot machine, you still can't allow them to win every time they play. So,
so I'm not sure yet that the casino is even necessary.
Right.
I think it's a great addition.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's nice, and I think it's great to have the tournament tournaments there, and,
right.
And of course feed the casinos where they can with food and beverage and right. other aspects along those lines. But as an overall gambling audience, not sure how that's going to work mm-hmm. out yet.
And then, you know, when you look at the regulatory structure, I mean, the regulators have to be comfortable with this, you know, and, you know, how are you going to explain to them, you know, they can't really throw the game by, you know, killing themselves with the dragon or something like that.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things. We talked about this at the esports right. Conference, so I'll go ahead and give you a couple of things. Not only the regulators, too, it's also the bookmakers have got to be careful.
Right, sure.
Right. We've got... You know, there's integrity involved in mm-hmm. from our side. So there you go. Right. There's the integrity side of things coming out. From a bookmaking perspective, you want to make sure that the software is tested,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially in today's day and age when anybody could be hacked.
I mean, right.
You got everybody advertising on Facebook, mm-hmm. and everybody's been Sony. Everybody's been hacked at
right.
some point, and now computing power is getting only stronger with quantum computing and everything else. These hackers are just gaining in speed. My concern is testing on software to make sure the integrity is there. How are they going to do that?
Mm-hmm. Right.
We're not sure how the labs are going to be able to, when you've got a new version of something
right.
coming out
yeah.
every year, mm-hmm. and then during that year, you have 20 or 30 updates and
yeah.
bug fixes and mm-hmm. patches and all of that.
Right.
So how are the test labs going to be able to keep up with that and make sure that the software is into integrity? Secondly, you got match fixing.
Mm-hmm.
So you got
sure.
you got the players
right.
themselves, right? You know, some of them getting paid a lot of money, some of them not getting paid so much
right.
money. So
yeah.
you have match fixing that you have to worry about
mm-hmm.
there as well. There's, of course, doping, which you
right.
know can also be involved with Adderall and,
mm-hmm.
and focus-enhancing drugs and things
and
like that.
And you have the age issue as well. I mean, people have told me, you know, the best age for e-gamers is 15 to 22, you know.
That's a great point.
Yeah,
right.
so, you know, how, can you bet on a 15-year-old? You know, I guess
yeah.
you can in the Olympics when they're ice skating, you know, but...
I think it's phenomenal. Obviously, the audience is amazing.
Yeah.
I was watching one guy
mm-hmm.
on Twitch the other day, 550,000 viewers. Just imagine.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Right? So broadcast, I think, is huge.
Yeah.
Data, I think, is going to be very huge for that. And being able to get in-play data on something that moves as fast
right.
as esports does is going to be a challenge, but I think it's going to be pretty awesome.
Right.
It's already out there now, right? So it's people are doing it. You know, one of the things that I will say about the casino business is, you know, we moved here 41 years ago now, and when I moved here, there were slot machines in the casino.
Right.
There was a craps table, there was roulette, there was blackjack, and 40 years later, there's still slot machines, there's still a craps table,
right.
there's still roulette.
Yeah, right.
And we've
yeah.
all had game consoles,
right,
and
sure.
Mario Brothers and whatever.
Yeah.
Didn't stop people from coming to the casino.
Mm-hmm.
I think the casino industry will be fine,
right.
with or without esports.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a nice addition, one from a betting side.
Right.
You have more markets to bet
mm-hmm.
on, have more opportunities to bet on. But I think it needs to be unified at some point as well, semi-unified.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is too much. It was like...
Yeah, well, you mentioned all the games, and they're all different publishers.
Yeah.
So you have to deal with each of these different publishers if you want to put them into... But I think it's going to be like bowling in the 50s, where there were a million manufacturers of bowling equipment, now there's two.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess a good question would be, do the game publishers really need casinos?
Right, yeah, exactly.
And they're getting their subscriptions,
right.
they're getting their audience,
yeah.
they're getting everything anyway.
Yeah.
So really, the you know, casino industry, I think, needs esports more than esports needs the
yeah.
casino
yeah.
industry.
No question.
The other thing, too, it's fairly interesting about the whole phenomenon is that it reminds me of going back to days when mixed martial arts was first coming out.
Right.
Remember
yep.
how many
sure.
leagues there were,
yeah.
how many different types there
mm-hmm.
were. They were putting a karate guy with a
right.
judo guy,
yeah.
and there was just
mm-hmm.
a mismatch of all different types of things. I think there needs to be some sort of unification or stuff. It would be nice to see a league that we could all know who our celebrities are,
right.
who
right.
our heroes are. And some of these guys are already rock stars.
Right. Right.
You
they are.
You don't get
yeah.
500,000
yeah.
viewers on
yeah.
Twitch without doing something right.
Yeah.
But I think it does need some sort of structure or unification in order to be solid.
Right. Well, John, it's great talking to you. Again, thanks for helping us out with this session at the UNLV Gaming and Hospitality Education Series. Anybody wants to sign up for that, you go to UNLVGHES.com and sign up for it. You can sign up for the last three episodes this year or singly. You can also watch it on the web, which I think will be really interesting as well. So we're looking forward to that, and thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Always.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of the GGB Podcast, brought to you by Global Payments Gaming Solutions. To learn more about the services provided by this company, visit globalpaymentsgaming.com. To read more about the spread of legal sports betting across the United States, visit ggbmagazine.com. For weekly updates on all the news of the gaming industry, visit ggbnews.com. And to find the best bonuses and promotions for iGaming and how to attract more players to your legal iGaming site, visit igamingplayer.com. Follow us on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz and on Facebook and LinkedIn at Global Gaming Business Magazine. That's it for today. Hope to see you next week on the GGB Podcast.